District 32, Business Radio. Insights and inspiration. District 32. By today's business leaders.
Hello, this is Alan Cox from District 32 Business Radio. Today we're here talking with David English and John Monahan from the Oban Group. Good morning, David. What inspired you to get into business?
Well, one of the key things, Alan, was that I used to work for a large organisation within Western Australia and over East, and there was an opportunity with my now business partner to start up a facilities management business. We had very quick conversation in the pub, and he says, "What do you think of this?" And I started thinking about it, and I went, "Yeah, let's catch up for another beer." And then the next thing we knew, we were signing up to a franchise business. And then we had that for about 18 months. It was called Mink Services. And we wanted to sort of grow the business nationally and be involved in national contracts. Western Australia's only got 10% of the business nationally, so it's always a bit harder for us to do that. So we agreed to buy out, and buying out of a franchise, it's never easy. So we managed to retain our customers, though, which was great. And that's how we came up with the name Oban, because we had to change the name at the last minute, and we ran out of different names.
Where does the name Oban come from?
Oban's actually it's a town on the west coast of Scotland.
Oh, okay.
And it's where I went to high school. So it's a place that kind of surrounds me, I guess. But the reason that we sort of chose Oban, I suppose, is we had an idea in our mind that we wanted a small logo with a one-word slogan. So we had different versions of different things, but it turns out a lot of them have been taken by other companies. And Oban hasn't been taken by other companies. So we stuck with that, and it's I think it's been quite well received, to be honest. It's quite a nice, simple brand.
Yeah, and what's your one-word slogan?
Well, we've got a kind of, it's a two slogan is, we look after your buildings so you can look after your people.
Yep.
And it's all about what we do is managing assets and buildings and letting customers look after their core business and their people. And it particularly comes across in the sort of aged care place and disability services, where the focus should be on people and not on leaking roofs, air conditioning units, all the other sort of maintenance tasks that you have. That's our core business.
So you look after the building and let the business look after the people.
Their people, yeah.
Okay.
Yes, that's our kind of key slogan. Mm. Anyway, we started up the business and we had all the usual challenges. We started up with zero customers, zero clients. I was lucky enough to go to I have a network of people from my previous business, which you leaned on for the first sort of 12 months. And then from there, we had a few lucky breaks with some contracts. And then once you start getting a few contracts under your belt, you get a sort of steady flow of work. And then all of a sudden, you've started to build a business. And now, from being myself and a girl who worked 8 hours a week with us, we're now seven full-time people.
Good.
And growing, we've just actually moved offices as part of that growing pain, I guess. We've gone to a bigger office, which is all positive. So it's great news for us. Mm. But I suppose one of the things that I always kind of want to try and tell people about is when you start off as a sole trader or a business, if you want to stick as a sole trader, that's fine. But if you want to become bigger, you have to have a plan. You have to have a goal, a target. Even how small, my business plan was in my head for probably 3.5 out of the 4.5 years. It's only recently we've put it down on paper, but it still drove me to do what we need to do. And again, like all businesses, the ups and down of work. And not only that, when you bring someone on, you give them lots of work and you've eased it off you. You can go into the business development mode again. Then you build up work and you start taking on projects. And then you're not doing business development. And then you get to a point, right, and you bring another person on to do. So you go through all that. And now we're at a stage where I don't really need to do that now.
That's awesome.
Which is good, yeah. Mm.
What's been the biggest challenge for you in that growth period?
We've been lucky with staff, so I wouldn't say staff. I think cash flow is always a thing. But I think you can manage through that. I think it's more about generating customers. It's the business development. It's the marketing. You don't have the budget when you're small, and you have to get out there and do it. I mean, it's tough, and you need a couple of lucky breaks.
How did you do it?
Well, we did some sponsorships, and we did some sort of symposiums where we had a table. That did give us some exposure to new clients, but it was all about, I mean, it's kind of a cliche, but sitting down having a coffee, you know, face-to-face. And it's all about that person likes you, you like them. And you go, well, yeah, I quite like them. I can go on with him. He's all right. I'll give him a chance. And that very much happened. The first contract, the first big break we had was a large housing contract, so managing 20 commercial units, maybe 140 houses. And we lost the tender. And thought, right, okay, it was early doors for us. We weren't too disappointed. And then 6 months down the track, he phoned us and said, look, we want to have a discussion with you regarding this contract. Yeah, yeah, we'll come in. We'll come in straight away. And we went in, and they weren't happy with the current provider. And it was really just down to an individual they didn't like, and it wasn't in line with their values, really. And we sat down with the two guys on the client side, and they both liked Chris and I, and struck up a conversation, gave us some opportunities, and said, right, let's run at this for 6 months, and then if you're still happy, we're happy, let's have a contract. And
it's all about relationships.
It's all about relationships, absolutely all about relationships.
Mm. Yep. Networking builds relationships, and relationships builds business.
That's right. No, absolutely, and it's probably a key tip for everybody, isn't it? It's even going to a small local networking group. You'll meet somebody else, you'll build a bit of a friendship with them, they'll recommend you, and it's business development that costs you nothing.
And it's also not just the person that you're speaking to, it's who they know.
That's right. It's nearly always that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
David, you've talked about here, you've got here that one of the points you want to talk about is facility management. Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, look, facility management, I think, is one of the things that certainly John and I always talk about is facility management sometimes gets construed as this big business type service that's outsourced. It's not at all. It can be used for everybody. It's facility management is really outsourcing your non-core business. So whether it be someone at your front desk and reception to cleaning, gardening, maintenance, aircon, everything. But you're going through one provider and you're agreeing some service levels and some KPIs. You don't have to be a big company to do this. It can be done in the smallest of businesses, smallest of companies. It's all about setting what you want, what service you want, and talking to someone that can give you that service.
As the client.
As the client. The key thing to any good facility management is the client setting almost like a brief and going, this is what I want to get out of this, whether it be cost savings, whether it be increased service, quicker turnaround in jobs, a whole risk of whole range of things. But we have to have that chat before you start. Because a lot of them make the mistake, go out there and they'll buy some software or they'll buy, and they think that's the silver bullet that's going to give them a facilities management contract. It never is. It's all about a simple chat about what do you really want to achieve first.
You're not talking about relationships again, are you?
Yeah, again. I am indeed.
As a building owner, mm-hmm. What is in it for me then if I came to you to look after the facilities? What would be my first step?
Your first step is you need to write down what you want to achieve out of it. And some simple goals: I want to increase the look of my property. I want to have one point of contact. I don't want to be phoning up 10 tradespeople. I want an after-hours help desk. I want. There's a whole range of things that you might want. Then you go to the facility management company, like ourselves, what we do. We do a different range of different things for different customers. And then from that brief, you can develop a sort of a scope of works and then build it into a contract.
Okay.
It's not one size fits all. You might be happy to keep things in-house.
You know. So you have got, like, as my maintenance facility manager, you've got access to all of the electricians, plumbers, builders.
That's right.
Do you employ them? Like,
no, with our business, we're a management company. So we subcontract all these services, if you like. And the difference for me is that that we actually manage the procurement of the contractors. So we do all the checks for you, for police checks, insurances, licenses, compliance.
So that's another thing that as a building owner, I don't have to worry about
You've outsourced
the security. It's all outsourced and it's your problem.
That's right. Okay. You pass that risk to the provider.
Yeah. Because you can't know
everything. It's hard to keep up with everything.
No.
It's easy for us to do it.
And also there are people who perform and people who don't.
Yeah.
You know, the ones that don't.
Yeah. I mean, the people that are on, that work with us do perform.
Yeah.
But I think the difference is when you're employing a facility manager, if you're not happy with a service, they can change it for you. They'll swap out a contractor. If you're not happy with the cleaning, you go through a process of managing that. And if it doesn't improve, you switch it out. Make sure you get the service you need. Whereas if you've got a cleaner, you've got to procure another one. It's harder, a lot harder.
John's got some points to make on strata maintenance. Can you tell me about that, please, John?
The start of any good property management is about assessing the condition of the building and obviously then with that information, then formulating a plan to bring it up to a standard and then maintain that standard. It's classic facilities management 101. In strata in particular at the moment, due to the new legislation that's just been brought in, strata properties with more than 10 units and with a total replacement value of more than $5 million now has to have a 10-year maintenance plan in place. And what that does, it involves an inspection of the property, a listing of issues that need to be fixed straight away or over the 10 years, and then allocating funds to those activities. And then the implementation, if you will, of a reserve fund, so that all of the people within the strata are putting money away for those predicted repairs and replacements. It's a level of responsibility that has been in corporate property for many, many years, and the capital expenditure budget was an integral part of property ownership and management. Now it's been brought into the residential sector, and I think the level of complexity now of some of the strata setups with high-rise, with common area amenities such as pools, lifts, lobbies, and all of the things that that people expect now in their strata community need to be paid for. And acknowledgement of a life cycle that will eventually break and require replacement. So what we're able to do as a part of the business, we have a building condition audit surveyor who his sole job is to go and inspect properties and come up with a list of backlog maintenance and some predicted costs, goes to a strata community, has a look around. We then produce a report, which is a 10-year maintenance plan, which then the Council of Owners has as a guide and a budget, obviously to manage going forward. What we like to do with that plan, though, is to follow up. When the plan is issued to them, it's not just a document for compliance. It's actually a working, living and breathing document, and it really quantifies their responsibility over that period of time.
Excuse my ignorance, but I'm assuming that the strata owners are the owners of the building, that like each unit.
They are.
They make up that strata committee or...
They are indeed. They are indeed. Obviously, as part of that strata, there's a lot of common amenities involved, including grounds and driveways and everything else that is needed by everyone in the community. And the the benefit of maintaining those amenities obviously is a benefit for all and all the residents of the community. So again, the importance of maintaining those and not just maintaining the look or the integrity, but also the compliance. As you know, with swimming pools in particular, the compliance changes quite regularly. Lifts and lift compliance and maintenance, and all of the cladding and everything that sort of goes around the structure of these modern buildings has to be looked at and you know, viewed critically, I suppose.
I guess the it would take some of the stress away from the residents, not the individual owners. I mean, has there been any issues with strata committees? I'm just looking the expression on her face, and I can tell the answer's yes.
Absolutely.
Can you give us an example of, without naming names, of something that went wrong? No, not with you, but you know, with the strata.
No, absolutely, Alan. The if you apply it to your own home, you can put up with a fence that with a paint peeling. You can put up with a roof tile that needs to be replaced during the summer. Obviously, what you need to do is start protecting and using some preventative plans to stop that deteriorating, because it's detrimental to the overall value of the asset. And obviously, people come and go and buy in and out of stratas. We all now have this opportunity to have a look at this maintenance plan and give them some certainty and them some protection in their purchase. And similarly with insurance. People who are betting on you having a compliant and safe property will now have a plan to look at. So that's it's a very long answer to a very short question. But at the end of the day, we tend to look past and walk past things every day that are non-compliant. And there are a lot of examples of bad practice, shall we say, that need to be addressed very quickly. And operationally as well, not just with repairs and maintenance, but the use of the areas. And I really don't want to go any further.
No. Okay. All right. And number three, David, building maintenance.
Yeah, probably just following on from what John was saying. I mean, building maintenance obviously covers a whole wide range of different things associated with your building and property. But it was really just a sort of, one of the things that we do is sort of, is a one-stop shop. So people come to us and we'll organise different trades. But focusing on the building maintenance on a basic level that every single person, and probably particularly strata, is just actually go out and walk the grounds, walk the site, walk the fence lines. You'll see things that are not quite right. And rather than engaging or wait until things fail, actually just capture some of these things, take a photograph, send it to your facility manager, or send it to the property manager or the council of owners and say, look, I seen this when I was out the other day, bit of an issue, and pass it on to them and they can deal with it. The amount of stuff we've seen, I mean, certainly I've seen in strata complexes, the basic stuff like uneven pavers, you know, it's just probably a trip waiting to happen kind of thing.
So with a group of residents being the strata manager, they're much better off to actually get a independent, you know, facilities, building maintenance.
Oh, look, I think it depends on the complex as well, I suppose, because some are very basic, you don't need that much. But I think a lot of people get confused with strata managers thinking that they manage the whole property. Strata managers are actually just administrators. So they administer your sort of trust account, the requests from the council of owners and the residents, and they pass them on to the Council of Owners, and the Council of Owners is a body that's been elected by the residents of the complex, or the owners of the complex, should I say. And the decisions are ultimately theirs. It's not a strata manager that makes these decisions. The strata manager does give advice, but strata managers aren't building maintenance experts. Some of them do have building people in them, but most of them are there to manage the strata administration of the Act, as well as the regulations, and making sure that the people in the complexes are applied by them, and the fees are collected, contractors are paid. So when you've got things, I always think just a simple walk round, and even so many car parks with basements now, you can see things that are leaking and go, right, okay, I'll take a picture of that, send it off, and then you start to capture these things, and then you can really tackle them before it becomes an issue, because even a simple thing like a leak in a car park, once the stuff starts coming through onto your car, it takes paint off it. So it becomes quite an expensive exercise for everybody in the complex, because that's a strata issue. So your fees are going into that, something that could have been avoided. So there's a lot of things that you can do in a basic level. And the 10-year maintenance plans will be a huge difference to the whole strata market, for sure. But it's going to be a bit of a shock to the industry as well, because if you're out there looking at two apartments and you look at the 10-year maintenance plans and one's got a re-roof happening in year three and you're up for 20K, and you look at the other apartment and theirs is all up to date, looking good, it's a decision you have to make as a buyer. You've got that information now. Whereas previously, you could have bought an apartment and 3 years later, you've got a special levy on your door for 20K. So that's the difference with that stuff.
That's what's in it for the individual owners.
That's what
I've been trying to work out. What's in it for them? It's peace of mind.
Peace of mind for buyers. And I think long term, if you're an owner of an apartment, you want to retain that asset value. So maintaining it, looking after it, replacing what needs to be replaced is key to maintaining that asset, because you're going to be competing with other apartments. And I think this visibility and transparency has got to be a great thing for everybody. But also, I think one of the things I was talking to a gentleman during the week, and these guys are advising us, that if you've got two identical apartment blocks and they're next door to each other, both, say they're both valued at $2 million, and one's got a reserve fund there, all working in action, and the other one's got a backlog of, say, 200,000. They're looking at actually reducing the valuation by 200,000. So all of a sudden, your valuation of your asset has gone down by 200,000 because you haven't addressed what has to be addressed. So, yeah, it's going to be a huge change to the market. And I think no one really fully understands how it's going to pan out, because we've got so many. I think we've got 300,000-odd strata lots, strata companies in Western Australia. And a lot of them are very small. As John talked about earlier, there's a lot of complex buildings out there now too. Mm. And they're getting to 10, 15-year-old. And that's a kind of, 15 years is kind of a key date for mechanical equipment, typically. That's when it starts to fail. Not even fail, especially with technology. The sort of energy consumption of these assets are 40% more than the ones that are now current. So it's all these things, and you've got to change them out and get rid of them. And yeah, it's big money as well, some of that stuff. If you're in a 10 to 20 lot, you're not dividing that cost by many, and it can still be a significant cost. Because quite often the roof, say, of a 20 to, say, a 20 lot apartment is very similar size to a one in a 60 or an 80 high rise, but you're dividing the cost by 20 instead of 60 or 80.
Wow. There's some fors and againsts of buying strata.
I think, although that's all quite negative, I suppose, but I think one of the things nowadays is that people want to live in a community. We're very distant from other people. And strata, I think developers in particular have really grasped that. I mean, John talked earlier with swimming pools. Recent development that we've got around us has got swimming pool, bars, theatre room you can hire out, barbecue areas, the only bit that's really missing is they're just not connecting all the residents to get together to form the community. But I think that community living is, I think it appeals to a lot of people.
Well, I think it's needed.
Yeah.
And certainly with the, I suppose, the spread out of the metro, like the Perth metropolitan area, it's spread. So that's got to change. Yeah. So there will be more and more high-rises. I mean, Cannington, Applecross.
Yeah, well, we've just moved office to Applecross and we've got a huge, we've got three huge towers there. Mm. And there's another two to go up.
Is there?
Yeah, so it's, but it's one of these, it's going to keep happening across Western Australia with these mini hubs at transport sort of destinations. It makes sense. And Applecross is a lovely place to stay, great views.
Mm. Central.
Yeah, and I think, but you can create that community, I think. You know, I think it's, they're not quite there yet, but I think it's very positive, I think, on the whole there.
So the trend is for community-based living, and one good way to do that is by strata buildings.
Yeah.
And the best way to protect your investment is to have a building maintenance program.
Correct.
That'd be right?
Hang on.
This is Alan Cox from District 32 Business Radio. We've just been chatting with David English and John Monahan from the Urban Group.
You've been listening to District 32 Business Experts that educate and inspire. District 32 Business Radio, Business Experts, throughout the hour on District 32, the Power of Connection.